Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I'm the better half of your presenting duo. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me, looking like some kind of fucking Mrs. Doubtfire in Hy-Vis.
Chris... Mrs. Doubtfire, she'd been tangoed.
I mean, let me just break it down. Oh, hello, Chris. Let me just break it down, right? He's at home in Margate, right? Orange beanie, gamer fucking headset on.
Oh, yeah.
Matching orange t-shirt and an apron that's got pictures of mushrooms on it.
Magic mushrooms, mate. Yep.
What's it all about?
And nothing else. I weren't going to tell you, but I've literally just been cooking and then it was like, shit, it's 1 minute two. And then I thought, you know what? I'm proud of this apron. It's a nice apron. So I thought,
is it a Kaf Kitson, you know, one and everything? Look at that.
Kaf Kitson, yes, because I know how to cook.
Yeah.
And I think it's Molly's apron. Let's get real for a second. She knows how to cook. She's sorting out the mess that I started, basically. I was like, got to go now. So, yeah. And the orange
that's generally
just
the story of most people's relationship with you. It's been mine for the last 5 years. Picking up the fucking mess you leave. Right. Anyway, before we get on with anything, should we have a word from our sponsors, Christopher?
Let's do it, mate. Let's do it.
BangBoomCreative.com. That's where you need to go for the very best in film and photography work.
Yes, yes. Luke and his team over at Bang Boom have been proud sponsors of ours for a few years now, and we can tell you two things about them.
One, their stuff is bloody excellent. They've produced content for the smallest charities to the biggest commercial brands, and it's always bang on.
Yeah, it works. We've seen Luke deliver an epic cinema advert for Pip, amazing photo shoots for the Two Girls One Shot podcast, made the girls look incredible, and of course he's done loads of great stuff for us. Great visuals, loads on Instagram. The one he did of me as an Ewok was proper good.
And secondly, well, they're just bloody nice people. Lovely to work with. Lots of companies can kind of take pictures and film something, but not everyone can do it with the sort of passion and just ruddy kindness that sets Luke and Bang Boom apart from all the others.
So if you need some great visuals from a truly excellent company, please go check out bangboomcreative.com. Proud sponsors of the Hardcore Listening Podcast. The world can seem like a strange and sometimes dangerous place, but with Summit Academy helping you with your martial arts training, you'll always feel safe.
Dangerous loners are everywhere and usually come across as friendly members of your community. They can be simply doing DIY during the day and podcasting at night. The dangerous loner. They could also be running a well-known nightclub at the same time. Their cloven hoof is scraping behind you.
Wrenchy Simon James has been training karate for over 32 years and teaching for 28. He knows through first-hand experience that martial arts can give you the stress release you've been looking for, as well as teaching life lessons and fitness, and of course, more importantly, peace. At Sama, we teach karate, kickboxing, tai chi and MMA to all ages, from children as young as 4-year-olds to the very elderly, even Stu.
Rude. They can cater for all your needs, from just general fitness or a new hobby right the way through to a career in teaching martial arts. They run corporate training days for companies to have as team building exercises, as well as local self-defense classes. They even teach a parent and baby self-defense course. That's defense whilst carrying your child, not defense against maniac murder babies. There is absolutely no defense against them. Be aware of that. Chris, where can people find out more about the Sama Academy?
Yes, you can find out everything you need over at sama-academy.co.uk. That's sama-academy.co.uk. And maybe you'll become a black belt just like me.
Hello, this is Chaz from Love Beer. And I'm here to tell you about why I sponsor Hardcore Listening and what love-beer.co.uk does. I am a fully certified by the British Beer and Pubs Association for bar installation with a focus on home and office bars. I have loads of home bar clients who have really enjoyed the service during lockdown, as well as corporate office clients like Facebook and HelloFresh. I offer a complete solution from installing the bar equipment right the way through to keg supply. I also offer regular maintenance packages for those who want a bar without all the hassle.
Hello, this is Charles, also from Love Beer. I just want to also let you know I'm fully licensed to sell kegs. We can supply loads of different products from mainstream beers and ciders right through to trendy craft beers and even Prosecco kegs, all delivered to your bar by a certified technician.
Also, why I'm here, have I mentioned the Land Rover Beeries 3, which is a 45-year-old ex-MOD Land Rover Series 3 that we have done a complete restoration on during lockdown?
The 3 Beeries 3 is a custom-built high-performance bar hidden in the back of a Land Rover. The bar we have installed is capable of doing upwards of 500 pints per hour. We're about 4 to 5 weeks off having it all back together and ready to show it off. And I'll be launching an Instagram for it this week.
Nice one, Charles.
Nice one.
There we go. Speaking of sponsors, one of them's here.
We've got our new sponsor joining us today. That's why I'm wearing my new uniform.
Well, that was to impress me.
Well, the voice you can hear is Renshi Simon James. I couldn't find my gi. So basically, this was the next best thing.
Jesus Christ. I bet you've still got your gi somewhere.
I genuinely do. And as we talk throughout today's podcast, and we discuss maybe our plans with our new sponsor, maybe I'll try and dust that off. I don't think I can fit in it now. I'm too muscular, but I'm sure I'm going to try. It's not because it was for a 10-year-old. Firstly, thank you so much for reaching out and wanting to sort of like sponsor us and stuff like that. So it was basically, as a little backstory, we've got a Facebook page, obviously, and me and Stu, that's the one area, like when messages come in, we don't always catch them because we don't get notified as easy. And so I saw yours and it had been like, I think you'd messaged us like a month or two ago. I was like, oh shit, sorry. We're not ignoring you, so I just still enjoy the podcast. And thankfully, you hadn't got bored of us. So we had a chat and, yeah, well, you joined us.
I think it had been closer to 18 months when I'd originally met
it. No!
I met you before COVID.
No!
Yeah.
You know what, dude? I must have missed... I didn't even read the year. I just read the month.
Yeah. It got so bad, I deleted the message my end.
Oh, dude! See, you literally thought we'd pied you off or something.
Oh, no, I just thought,
we hadn't read it, had we, sir?
No, exactly. I just thought, oh, they haven't read it. You know, it's obviously not monitored. So I thought, oh well, I'll try again some other way, another time.
Oh no way!
Thank you, man, you then reach out 18 months later to show just how unprofessional and fucking shit we are. And yet, for some reason, you decide to offer us payment for sponsorship, which is unbelievable and brilliant. And so, you're not obviously. We should take this opportunity to sort of talk a little bit about Samra Academy and what you do. So, yeah. So explain to our listeners a little bit about what it is.
Well, primarily, it's basically a kids karate group is what we mainly do. So we actually teach, as an organisation, we teach karate, kickboxing, Tai Chi and MMA. We teach kids and adults, but mainly we teach straight from school classes, you know, like after school classes and evening classes and everything like that. And I just wanted to branch out a bit and start teaching other things like, you know, your lady self-defence and just general things like that are just outside of just teaching children. And I thought, I've reached out to a few people and I thought it'd be a good idea just to, when that young lady got unfortunately murdered by that copper, that was actually where I used to live. So it was in Clapham. Wow. So I know where it was that she was taken from. And at that time, I just thought, this is unacceptable. I've got daughters. I've got sons as well, but I've got daughters. And it's just that thought of the women that I've spoken to, they just feel unsafe all the time. Just constant. And so I try to offer a free lady self-defense thing, just an awareness course, and had a few people sign up for that and just, you know, get the name out. And just if I can run more lady self-defense courses and just do them for free, I don't, you know, it's not about earning out of it, it's just get the message of how to be safe on the street. But just I don't think people know how to do it.
Absolutely. Well, that kind of ties into today's five, and we'll get on to that again in a minute. But so your kind of position within within Samra is like, so you're, what damn black belt are you?
Fifth dan. So basically, there's, wow, in the whole of the club, you've got the chief.
So that's one dan below where I got to, I think.
Sounds about right, yeah. I mean, I can normally tell when I look at people and I meet them, I haven't met them in person, but just seeing you in the video, you give off the presence of someone who knows martial arts.
Thanks, mate. Or maybe I'm an orange belt, according to my own outfit.
Yeah, tonight. You're orange today. but yeah, so at the top of the club, there's Hanshi is the seventh black belt. And then you've got my instructors, which Xi'an is the seventh dan. Sorry, Hanshi's the ninth dan. Xi'an's a seventh, and then Kyoshi's a sixth dan. And then you've got below that, you've got the Renshis, which are fifth dan. So there's a few of us, I think there's about 12 in the whole club. But we teach. See, I started in 1989 when I was 11. In Worthing on the south coast, which is where the club started, sort of Brighton, Worthing sort of area. And started there, got my black belt in 93, and just always wanted to teach. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do.
That's amazing. Just speaking to you when we had our first phone call, so it was just mad to think how big an operation that you run, and all the different people that, you know, work alongside you. And I felt immediately out of my depth from my experience, and because I started in about 88 89, and I only really did it for I think 4 or 5 years, I think was my run. So I was just blown away by like how what you've built at Samra Academy. It sounds it's pretty impressive, mate.
Sounds to me, Chris, that you're taking backward steps, mate. You I never hear you being so sort of playing down your black belt. Just it's quite weird that.
Well, I've never ever said I'm a black belt.
I think reference might have been made to it earlier, but
yeah.
What about you, Chris?
No. It's normally people around me will point me out and go, be careful of him.
Yeah,
exactly. I wouldn't do that shit. I'm, you know, I'm not tough at all. I don't want to fight. This is me backing out of any sort of conflict with Sai. I don't know. Have I got a roll on my back? Is that what you do? I just think it's awesome. So you know what you do, and all the different courses that you put out, and what you were saying about you know, offering the free self defense courses to women. That's not something that, it's weird as a boy, but self-defense, I guess because of how I grew up and whatever, wasn't something that I particularly worried about very much, and I never really thought about. And it wasn't until I was like honestly, really quite late in life. Like, I remember like being like 29 and talking to some of my, best girl mates about, you know, feeling safe when they're out. And I really was like, fucking how ignorant of me not to think, like, it's kind of a complete world of difference for you walking home, especially when I lived in Birmingham. Like, it was where I grew, where I studied in Birmingham was quite, it was quite dangerous at points. And I just totally neglected how terrifying that must be for some of my female mates.
Playing that down a little bit as well there. Last time you mentioned that, your exact words were, "I saw people die, man," was your exact phrasing.
I wasn't in Nam.
What you said on the drunk cast?
Dagenham. No, I said that I used to see the murder forensic people walking around in the big spacesuits. I didn't see anyone get shot.
Right. I think we should have Simon on every week because I'm really liking this new Chris.
He's very quiet, isn't he?
Well,
yeah.
I'm less boasty.
Yeah.
No, mate.
Humble
no,
Glasson. I'm loving him.
I can't do any of that. I can't wait, sir, because we've also chatted about why you've decided to support us and be a sponsor, about raising awareness of Summer Academy, of how popular karate is now, that it's actually a career for people who want to pursue it. You can go and you can then teach karate. But also as a means of doing that is basically maybe me and Stu coming down and maybe having a lesson. And I can't wait to do that. I think that's just going to be a barrel of laughs. And that's what I mean. Like, hopefully I can find that gi to crack that one out of the loft. I don't know what gi to get. I don't know whether to get my white one or my black one or my red one, Stu. I'm not too sure. Just depends, because I had them for different levels of competition I was fighting in. But you'll probably be wearing your white one, right?
Just the white one. That's all I had.
Just the white one, mate, yeah. But we went to the same academy, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Did Stan ever mention the other colour ones to you, or was you just like, you know...
Stan was too busy getting all the parents to applaud me because I've done really well for a fat kid.
Oh, mate.
Yeah.
I don't think it was your size. I think it was you bad at karate. We're going to find out because I've got comfortable with Sai being here now and my mouth is starting to write checks. And you two are like, yes. I'm going to reverse punch that prick.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, just to sort of touch, obviously, like Chris and I, you know, a friend of the show, Pip, we try not to do it too much because we know a lot of listeners, you know, aren't necessarily as passionate about it as us, but we're all obviously all big MMA fans. And I just wonder if, you know, through the evolution of you know, UFC becoming this huge global combat sport, with seeing fighters such as, obviously, Conor McGregor, Darren Till, Lyoto Machida, and lots of these fighters that are adopting that almost sort of low-slung karate style... Has it seen a kind of another sort of lift in the people that are interested in learning karate?
I think a lot of the adults that I speak to, they're wanting to go down either the kickboxing for fitness or the MMA because they see it on TV. Karate was always one of those things of like the questions you get asked about, oh, when you've got a fight, do you have to take your shoes and socks off? It's like, no, it's still seen like that a little bit because it's traditional. Whereas I think people can envision themselves doing MMA because it's a little bit easier. It's a little bit, normal clothes. You're just putting a pair of shorts and a T-shirt on. You haven't got to get dressed up in, yeah, you know, any sort of suit or anything like that. Mm. It's when you then explain it to them and when you speak to people that, okay, so you look at these MMA people, they've got a background in a traditional martial art, taekwondo, karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, whatever it is. They've usually got some sort of background in a traditional martial art. And then it's only more recent that MMA has become a thing of itself to be taught rather than, I remember back in the day when I think it was UFC 1 or 2, when you'd actually have people fighting in their gis against a boxer who was in his boxing shorts or whatever it was, and whichever one of the Gracie brothers won it. And then the evolution of that, because then it was all just jiu-jitsu people who were winning it. Gracie's were taking over. And then it became its own thing. So, yeah, there's a lot more people getting into martial arts in general. for all sorts of reasons, fitness, for self-defense, just for confidence it gives you, you know, just to know that you can, in some part, either defend yourself or just avoid the situation in the first place because you can spot it. It's just a bit easier.
When you say about confidence building, I heard this week that Sean O'Malley, he joined, started mixed martial arts for confidence building. And you think, look at that lad now. He's like the most confident striker, confident personality you could hope to have, isn't it, really? Love him or hate him. I mean, he really is, he's got a good talent. And I did feel that learning martial arts brought out my inner confidence and sort of discipline. Not that you can tell now with my beard. Probably why I need to get down to the dojo.
You're 80% orange.
I really am. I really am.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can change that. How about now? Do I look less orange?
The beard's got even more orange. The hat has, but your top's gone a little bit more pastel.
I've absorbed the orange into the beard. Yeah. It's just one of the skills I learned. Stan taught me that one. Did he teach you that one, Stu? Or?
No, he just taught me how to do press ups in front of other people's parents.
Well, rather than
talking about the original
contrast out on the TV.
we were talking about the early UFCs. A couple of weeks back, and Stu, do you remember the guy who decided to come on as he had one hand free and the other hand in a glove? I'd have loved that to have caught on.
I still don't get what his thinking was with that. Unless he had a broken hand or something, I just think, why would you have one glove on? Like, I don't get it.
Power punch hand, I imagine.
Yeah, but you've automatically said you're only one-handed. I can only punch with this hand. This is the hand that's got the glove on. And I can't do anything else with my left hand. I can grab you, but you're not going to get any sort of choke, any sort of hold, any sort of arm bar, ankle lock, anything with a boxing glove on one hand.
Now, I think that's what was amazing about the start of UFC is like how it sort of people experimented to try and figure out what was best. And as you said, like it turns out BJJ or jiu-jitsu really started to dominate on the ground game. You'd have never thought that. But it's so cool to see, like, karate. I remember when Machida came on the scene and watching his obvious fundamentals in karate, especially because that's what I'd studied. Like, yes, it does work. It can work if you're, you know, if you're good enough.
I think that's the thing with karate is the fact that a lot of karate is people would think that once you get to the black belt, that's it. You know, you've learned everything. But the truth is when you get to the black belt, that's when you then start to learn the self-defense. Because I always equate it to learning to read. You don't learn to read by picking up Tolstoy. You learn your ABCs, then you put words together, then sentences, paragraphs, etc. So you have to build it up. So then you can get to the point of, I can defend myself, because I'm not just, although we do karate, we've done all the self-defense classes and black belt classes. You know, and we've done all manner of things, you know, whether it's 2, 3, 4-on-1 self-defense, knife defense, absolutely everything. So all the grappling and the fighting on the ground, that's all incorporated into your black belt stuff. Your traditional karate side of things, that's your grading system right the way up to your black belt. Yeah. You know, everything after black belt is then when you're pretty much going to learn. But
Shoes just got off the camera. I don't know if he's... gone to defend his home with some karate. Hopefully he'll be back in a second. So did you find that actually once you got to black belt in teaching, and did that like make you better as well?
Yeah, because I started teaching when I was 15. So I got my black belt on the Sunday. And on the Sunday evening, a friend of mine rang me up and said, "Do you want to come help teach a class on the Monday?" So literally the day after my black belt grade, I was teaching in a class. And I'd been teaching with my instructor, right. You know, teaching the sparring class and doing bits and pieces. It was to the point where, you know, that day in school when you have the careers advice, I said, "Right, what do you want to do?" I said, "I'm going to be a karate instructor." I said, "Have you thought of joining the police?" "No." "What? You're not listening to me. I'm going to be a karate instructor. I've made my decision. We don't need to carry on with this meeting." It was never seen.
Beginning and end. Yeah.
I mean, even I grew up outside of London. I live in London now, but I grew up in a place called Littlehampton, right, in between Worthing and in between Brighton and Portsmouth. And just around there, it's the amount of times I've got asked, so what do you do for a real job? No, this is my job. This is my career. This is all I've ever known how to do. But in London, it's completely different, which is why we can offer things like, you know, if you want to come and want to learn a karate and then, you know, potentially have it as a career later. People in London, well, I think people outside of small towns are more open to it because they're open to following their dreams. And I don't know whether it's, you know, because we're in 2021 now and people are, it's, Pip says it all the time. I can't remember where he got it from, but work shouldn't have to be something that you hate. Why should I hate my job? You know, I love my job. Brilliant. But,
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To have it so young as well, to know, to be that clear on it, is must have been, that's quite a reassurance, isn't it? As much as you've got doubters and haters, it's so weird, like you say, that, like, careers now, if we were like, if people knew back then what people would have as careers now, it would have been a completely different meeting, wouldn't it? Because, like, what are you going to do? I'm going to make videos of unwrapping gifts on a thing called YouTube. Yeah. It'd be like, you're not, mate. No, you're not.
Can you imagine if your YouTube, if your careers officer could see you now, Chris?
Be so proud. They'd be. So, I think they'd be proud because do you know what my my form tutor said at the end of Palmer's when I got 3 E's?
Wanker.
He fucking. He said to me, "It's a miracle you got 3 E's. You should be doing a lottery today." He'd previously called me a bullshitter, and I'm sure he might have seen next Tuesday under his breath. All of which, more power to him. I was all of the above. So yeah, so he'd probably be like, "Shit, he's not in jail." That's impressive.
Well, we haven't said what today's top five is going to be. Yes. So, Si, we'll leave it to you to introduce what your top five is going to be today, mate.
Rightio. Well, I decided in the spirit of women's safety and everything, we are going to do a top five of things that women can do every day to try and keep themselves safe and also throw in there kind of five things that guys can do to stop basically making women feel unsafe. General things.
Why are you looking at me?
We all do. And I think sometimes guys just don't even think they do it. They do it subconsciously, but yeah, it's not right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number five, let's kick things
that's
off.
That's going to be pretty handy. Yeah, let's hit it with number five.
Number five, I would say, if you're walking home, walking anywhere, don't have both headphones in your ears. You can't hear what's going on. No idea what's going on. If you have to listen to something just to make you feel a little bit calmer and relaxed or whatever music or podcast, just have one in. Just drop the other one out and you can still be aware of your surroundings and actively listen to what's going on, whether it's footsteps, traffic, people shutting up shops as you're walking home, that kind of thing. But yeah, to have both earphones in and completely shut yourself, especially with noise cancelling ones nowadays, you're completely shut off and you're advertising the fact that you've got these AirPods or whatever in.
Yeah. Because you're then only relying on what's coming from the front.
Yeah.
And you know, really, if someone's got malicious intent, they probably won't take that route. They'll probably come from behind. Not trying to be funny or anything. They'll try that, but that's probably the strategy, right? So yeah, you want to be able to listen. And when you're saying listen, I guess you're like, because hearing is passive, isn't it? Like, hearing's, you're not making any attempt to, just sounds come in. But if you listen, you're focused trying to hear.
Yeah.
You're focused in on your surroundings. So listening for footsteps and shit like that, I guess.
Yeah, listening for footsteps, quickening up, slowing down. If you're picking your pace up, are those footsteps going with you? Are they going in the same direction as you? Are they turning off? Are they, you know, there's a lot of things to do with just walking that, you know, I could go on for hours about it. I won't, but it's like I say, actively listen to what is going on, what is actually happening, you know, cars, whether they're driving quick, everything that's going on.
I guess one of the things, because I'm guilty of having noise cancelling headphones on, I literally about an hour ago, I did, it's pitch black, walking my dog, listening to music, and every now and again, someone will be out jogging or whatever, and will literally, as they get to my shoulder, it makes me jump. And I guess, obviously, you're completely vulnerable in that sort of situation. Whereas I imagine if you are aware that there's someone behind you, you are aware that them footsteps are quickening, more than anything as well, it kind of gives you a bit of time to actually think, right, what am I going to do here? Mm-hmm. Where do I run? Where can I run? Is there anyone I can call for? Like, I guess... Yeah, I'm no expert.
Where you're going to walk next as well, even yeah, like to reduce. I mean, so I found like in certain neighbourhoods where I've lived in the past, like I've done these things myself. You know, like there's certain places I've not felt safe, and I just think the prudent thing to do is to try and be a little bit more alert. And yeah, one of them would be, you know, take your earphone out. But these the iPods. Not that this is an advert for iPods. I'm sure other sort of pods do this now. You can have noise cancellation, but they've got a setting now on my earphones which is noise transparency, and there's little microphones in them, so it literally, you can turn it on and then you can literally hear it, magnifies sounds around you so that you can sort of like be walking and you can still have your wits about you, which is kind of snazzy.
I think it goes back to you saying about walking the dog in the dark, noise cancelling headphones on. That's kind of like that. We don't think about it. We're guys. But it's that sort of male privilege of, as long as I've been doing karate, which is over 30 years now, I still won't walk down the street with both headphones in. It's just, it's habit now, but I still won't do it. But at the same time, you know, I don't know how tall you two are, but like, I'm 6'1", tattooed.
Very.
I doubt that. I'm 6'1", I'm tattooed. I don't look like someone that you would want to approach in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, same with you. I mean, people don't want to approach you, Chris, but for a completely different reason.
Totally different reasons, mate.
Yeah. But so we don't necessarily think about it. But for a woman walking down the street, she might not necessarily think there's that thing of almost shrinking away and receding back into the shadows and thinking she can't be spotted. Where if you just have to be more aware, I think if you've got your just one headphone in, even with the noise being able to come in through the headphones, I still would always suggest just drop one out.
Yeah,
you just don't need both.
Yeah,
it's such a simple thing, isn't it? And and obviously it does. You know, you are completely cut off when you've got both headphones in, and yeah, and you're right. It is male privilege that I don't think, oh, no one's going to attack me, and which again is stupid anyway, because plenty of people get attacked where I live. It's fucking horrible.
It's that self-confidence and not to think, not to reflect that, that's not the case for everyone, really. So, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's the thing. Guys do get attacked as well. There's been a... Yeah. I've heard a couple of stories from around South London of guys getting attacked and sexually assaulted. Does happen.
And so with that in mind, I know you've got sort of other things that the guys can do. So in a sort of situation where, is there anything that kind of links into this one for like women walking along at night? Like, is there anything that, you'd suggest that guys could do?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a guy, be aware. Just be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of the fact that most guys are going to be bigger, heavier footed. Just if you're that close to a woman, just stop. Just don't follow her. You take a different route home. You go the longer way. You cross the road and walk on a different bit so that she can feel safe, so that everyone can feel safe. But the one thing I would say is don't do the speeding up thing and try and walk past her quicker. You just sound like you're going to attack her, that you're just going to make her more and more frightened. Drop back. Stop, tie your shoelaces, have a cigarette, do whatever it is you're going to do. But just give her that space. That would be...
I've been guilty of that, I have been guilty of not even speeding up to get past a person because I want to make them feel safe. Just I'm thinking, I want to overtake them because I want to get somewhere a bit quicker. Mm. And I've done that so much being in a hurry. But I do find of a night time if I'm walking and I see a woman and I approach from behind, I'll generally just cross the road. I think that's the easiest thing to do. That way I'm sort of like giving her a wide berth.
Mm. I think that there's that thing of, even if you're just walking in the road and like say giving a wide berth, you don't have to, if it's late at night, just walk in the road, put yourself out there. Yeah. She's got the whole of the pavement to herself. And then, if you want to do that and even something simple like, just say hello. Just, or some sort of like, not ask if they're all right or anything like that. That sounds creepy or everything. No. But just a nod or a nothing weird and scary. But acknowledge the fact that there's another human there, as opposed to, almost try and be scared yourself. That you don't want to come across as an attacker. So that sometimes I think guys, in not wanting to come across as attackers, look like attackers.
Yeah. Soften your facial expressions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's tough for Droopy over there. Isn't it, Stu?
Yeah, you don't look too threatening, mate. You literally look like fucking a children's entertainer today, I'm sure. And you've even got more orange behind you. You're literally sitting on an orange jumper as well.
I am. It's mustard, though, that one. I know, it's just, mate, it's like a lottery. It's like a fruit machine, but I pulled it. And everything that's come up just orange today, just out of random coincidence, basically.
Mm. Fucking disgraceful.
Should we have another number four?
Number four. No matter how much you want to, don't take dark alley shortcuts. Just because it's going to make lessen your journey by 20 minutes, 15 minutes, however long it is. And I know it sounds obvious, but where like that the young lady, Sarah Everard, that's exactly what she did. I know because where I used to live, it was the next road along, which is where she was taken from. And I know the housing estate she was taken from. And if she'd have gone the long way around, it was lit. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have happened, but it was lit. And the shortcuts you took would have saved her 45 seconds, a minute, and that was it. But it's completely dark. There's no lights. It's a housing estate, but you think you're safe when you're surrounded by people, but people are asleep. People have got their new double glazing windows. They can't hear anything necessarily outside. Yeah. And especially if you're in a large city like London, you can hear a bang outside and you're not even moving.
No, because there's no accountability, is it? Because it's like there's 500 other people who might hear it and actually then no one looks. Like in one of the roads I used to live in, a car alarm would go off and you could just see that car alarm or the house alarm go off. I've seen house alarms where me and Molly have been like, right, we better go because no one else has gone.
Yeah.
So you it can just people feel just like assume that and think, oh, someone else is going to deal with it, and they
with,
don't.
With car alarms, now it almost is like, oh, for fuck's sake, will someone turn that off?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's yeah. not like, oh, someone's having their car broken into. Like, you know, I do think we do become a bit more sort of desensitised to things like that, which is fucking crazy. But if you see someone breaking into a car, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend people go out there and try and do something about it.
Intervene. Maybe phone the cops.
Phone the cops.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That would be the first thing. But like you say, a car alarm going off, the assumption nowadays is, oh, for fuck, someone get that fucking alarm fixed. You don't think someone's breaking in. You just think it's a malfunction on the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so true. Yes, like, yeah. But I think this subject of... I think it's a real... It is a shame because I've heard the arguments made that why should people have to change their behaviours and be aware of this sort of thing because of dangerous people out there who don't seem to have a care. But, I mean, it's like you can't control, unfortunately. I'd love that to be the case, and I'd love to be in a society where everyone does respect everyone and it is safe like that, but... You can't control what other people are doing or thinking, and you know, we're not. That's not even involving like mental health that can be involved in a lot of these horrible tragedies that happen.
But
you can't control those things. You can only control, I guess, the actions you take to make yourself feel as safe as you can. Is that fair enough, Simon? Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying, isn't there, that an army marches to its slowest soldier. You can't just because. That there are these people, that doesn't mean that people shouldn't modify their behaviour to make everyone, to make society a better place, to make everyone feel safe, not just, you know, women and kids, but absolutely everyone. People who have got mental health issues, let's make them feel safe. Let's be like, okay, everything's a safe place. I'm not going to follow you ridiculously close or just kick off when you're having a breakdown. You know, in South London, you see so many people just round the corner from us. There was a place that housed all the local people with mental health problems or drug problems or anything else like that. You see them walking up and down all the time, and the majority of the time you end up feeling sorry for them. You know, all they want is a talk, all they want is a chat, but the amount of people that 9 times out of 10 were just giving them abuse,
ostracise them and be rude.
You know, I think everyone could, you know, if everyone just does a little bit to make it all a bit better, you're never going to, as you said, Chris, you're never going to stop, like, fucking real fucking twisted people. They've always existed and they'll continue to exist. But I think, you know, if by everybody doing, you know, gradual steps to ensure that, you know, 99.999% of the time everybody feels a lot safer, that's a good place to fucking
yourself
start.
And other people, for sure.
Yeah, if we actually work as a society together to get rid of these types of problems and for everyone to be acting in a certain way, the 0.01% of complete and utter psychopaths and sociopaths, they stand out more. They're going to stand out. If everyone else is doing, you know, something about it and saying, well, do you know what? I'm not going to walk free. You know, just 3 foot behind this person, male or female, I'm just going to back off a little bit. Everyone's so busy with their own life that their own race is all they're concerned about. And where they're going is the most important thing in the world, rather than, you don't know what someone else is rushing for. You don't know where someone else is going or what they're thinking.
I definitely think that in the more built up areas, You find yourselves in, you know, you go to somewhere more rural, you get out in like these villages and that, and the pace is different. You know, when you get to Essex, it starts to quicken, and by the time you get into London, everybody, to me, my experience of working in London and being in London, you know, very often, is that a big majority of people are like, well, I've got somewhere to fucking be, and it's the most important thing on the fucking planet. And like, and I don't see a huge sense of community.
No, speed sickness. Like, I think it's, absolutely, mate. I think that the more people that are around you, I think as well, like, not only is like life at a faster pace, but the more people are around you, the less real opportunity you've got of establishing any form of meaningful relationship in that short time you're near them. So it comes to a point where you just go within yourself and then block everyone out. Like, whereas when you, what we've said about in rural areas or where I'm, like if I'm going up in the mountains and that, everyone you meet, you like, or you're going out for your run, you're much more friendly to. You probably feel more reassured in those areas sometimes than you would, yeah.
But it's like outside of London, I ride motorbikes. Outside of London, you've got the biker knot. And it's, but as soon as you get into London, I've done it before because obviously I'm not, I wasn't brought up in London. I've given it the nod, you know, as you're passing another biker, nothing. As soon as you get outside of London, they're giving you the nod, they're looking at your bike and everything. Inside, no, they're not interested. No one wants to talk to anyone.
What bikes do you ride?
Sorry?
What bikes do you ride then?
I had a, I had to sell it recently to get a car for, to put my kids up, but it was a Ninja ZX10.
Oh, wow.
Before that, I had an R1 that got me.
I think I'd kill myself on one of those in seconds. Have you ridden them all your life then?
Yeah, since I was about 17. Amazing. It was actually my dad that bought me my first bike 3 years after he nearly killed himself on his.
Really?
Yeah, oh, the injuries he had were... I mean, he bit half his tongue off. Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
Bloody hell.
It was...
Everyone I know who's had motorcycles has, like, had serious injuries. Like, every single person. Yeah. Like, yeah, I've had pictures of people sending me pictures of their leg in a hospital, and it's like a banana, where the bike's fallen on them, just crushed the lower half of their leg. And they were told they could never walk again. By some miracle, they managed to get it completely repaired, obviously, you know, including a few bolts, back on motorbikes again. It's like, you know, if you love it, you love it.
Yeah, we'll always go back on bikes. Bikers will always just go, I'll be all right. It'll be all right this time. But no, luckily, I haven't had anything serious so far.
Stu, have you ever dipped your toe into that?
Yes, you know I have, you fucking prick. You know I have.
I can't remember.
And you know that I fucking fell off.
Do you want to
You know I crashed it into a barbed wire fence, don't you? And I had to get cut out of it.
Sorry, no, I genuinely, my stupid brain had forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Cut out of a barbed wire fence?
Yeah.
Right, how fast
can you go? Not that fast, but it was like I think it was like a 125. It was like my mate had a lot of land, and because he lived in the middle of nowhere, like he couldn't kind of do all the things that we all done living in like a town. So his parents like got him a little motorbike like to ride around the fields on, and so when you went over there, you just have a go on it. And my experience of motorbikes when I was like 15 was just like a little kind of automatic like moped that someone would buy for like 50 quid that we just literally ragged the arse out of over the field for about 2 weeks till it died. But this had gears and I'd never used gears before. And I don't know what I was doing, but the back wheel just sort of seemed to lock. And then I was like, oh no. And then it literally just went straight into a barbed wire fence. And laid there with the motorbike still whirring away while they all come over laughing, obviously. And like you do as a lad, it's really funny, isn't it, when your mate's wrapped up in barbed wire.
Like the rabbit in Watership Down.
And then his dad come over and cut me out of it. And his dad looked more fucking angry about the fact that I damaged his fence than the fact that I was fucking wrapped in... looked like fucking Jesus. Like, yeah, it wasn't a good look. Oh, dear. What number are we on, Christopher?
We're coming on to number three now. So we've just come from, you know... Avoid maybe dark and alleys for shortcuts.
All right. Number three.
What's number three?
Walk in the middle of the pavement. So when I was running these ladies self-defense classes, I asked them questions. What do you do late at night when you're walking home? And quite a few of them answered that they actually try and hug the wall, which, in my opinion, is completely the wrong answer. You walk in the middle of the pavement. The thing with walking on your own is, you've kind of got to do it with confidence. So you walk with your head up, you walk in the middle of the pavement. If you're going to get attacked and you're on the side of the road, if you're near the road, you can get pushed into the road. If you're against the wall, you can get pushed up against the wall or into an alley, into a little, you know, shop front, anything like that, you're putting yourself in more danger. If you're in the middle of the pavement, not only does it make you seem more visible to everyone else, it also means that you've got a better point of view of everything that's coming in front of you. You can hear more. You haven't got, you know, your left side against the wall or anything, you know, which, you know, blocking sound and all the rest of it. It's just dangerous to be either side of the pavement. Just get in the middle. Once you can then see everything that's ahead of you, you can make a decision whether you're going to cross the road to avoid it or, you know, take a different
that's
route.
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, because if you walk... I had a mate, we used to work in a bar, and he got mugged twice. I don't think it was the same person, but it was within like the space of a month. And he would walk round corners, because we'd been living in this area for a while, and I'd said to him before, you walk round corners really tight. I said, if there's someone there, especially because we finished this bar, it was like 3 o'clock on our walk home through this estate... I said, you walk around the corner so tight, you've got no idea what's immediately around that corner. If you take it a bit wider, I must say, I never thought so much of the walk in the centre. I always walked more on the edge of it, not thinking about the road safety part, to be honest with you. That's something I've learnt there. But at least walk so you've got enough space that you can see, you've got more of an opportunity to see someone who might be just around that corner and stuff like that. But good tip.
Like you just said about the turn in the corner, I always think of it as almost like taking a racing line. You know, like when you're driving, you come out and then you cut it that way. It's that, you do the coming out bit, so you can walk in the middle of the pavement, you come slightly out so you can actually see everything. Anyone's hidden here, you can see them. You've got more opportunity. Like you say, if you're coming tight and turning the corner, I mean, even just normal confrontation, just bumping into someone and ending up in a punch-up, just because you just bumped into someone, never mind being mugged or assaulted or whatever it is. Even if everyone did this as a normal, everyday part of life, everyone's aware of it. Everyone's more apologetic. Oh, sorry, that was me. Rather than, what the fuck are you walking there for? You know, and then all of a sudden, you're having a row with someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? So, the other thing that you said there, which I think is really, really good, is walking with confidence.
Confidence
as well, as much as you can.
Confidence is the most important thing. It actually comes into my number one, actually.
Oh, okay. We'll put a pin in that then and we'll go over it there. Yeah.
Let me just add, though, if you're walking anywhere at night wearing that, Chris, that's a confident look.
Yeah.
No, like, no one's fucking with me in this. They're like, what's he going to go and cook? I'm going to go and cook your balls up, mate. If you give me any trouble.
Did you ever watch Big Cook Little Cook with your kids?
That's exactly who it is, isn't it? That's exactly who it is.
What is it? What is it?
Big Cook, Little Cook.
What it was, and he's—I think he's a comedian as well.
Yeah, one of them. I think, were they
both? Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, he was just, he was a big old, big old gangly orange man.
I'm gonna have to look that up. Don't go playing anything, Stu, because you'll get it banned off YouTube again. You know what you like, playing your little music and stuff like that, and then record companies come after us. The other thing is, you both have daughters.
Sorry, I've just seen Big Cook, Little Cook.
God, what a mess! Oh, I'm gonna have to have a word with myself outside. I think, guys.
Big
but you
cock,
both have daughters, right?
Big Cook, Little Cock. That's your mate.
So, does that give you sleepless nights? Because, Stu, you basically, it was Hallie's first time at a club, wasn't it? At the weekend, and that must have,
strange. Like, one's 19 and one's 16. I just dropped one of them down the shopping centre. The other one's, in from work, and I don't know where she's going tonight. But yeah, like the youngest one's now got a friendship group, and, as we mentioned before, struggled throughout school, and now she's got some friends. I don't want to be the one going, you can't go out, you can't do that, you can't be out now, it's dark. So I have to kind of, give them a little bit of freedom. The other one's 19 and has got a job and a car. I'm limited as to what I can, I can't grand her. But obviously I can advise. And it was really weird at the weekend, because she did go clubbing, and she went to Baz Vegas, which is not the nicest place. I do appreciate your offer of, if you need anything, I can just be down there in 5 minutes. But
that's what I said. And then I thought, as I said it, I thought, I'm the last person you want. Yeah,
I did. I was quick to say, look, mate, I thought, I can't send you down to get kicked in by a load of 18-year-olds with six packs, Chris. It's not fair on you, mate. Hallie don't need to see that.
Not the face. Get out, Hallie.
I thought you said he had a black belt, Hallie. Yeah.
He's just got a black belt from River Island.
And obviously, like, as somebody that has run nightclubs for their whole life, I didn't want to be the one going, like, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. If that happens, speak to them. If that happens, do that. And it's like, oh, I can't do it. And it's like, I just think, right, she's going to go to her mates, and I just want her to have a really good time. And I was just like, look, I'm 15 minutes away. Any problems, phone me up. And I think, she was getting a cab there with her mates, getting a cab back with her mates. And obviously I said, don't go anywhere on your own. And she had a great time. And it's like, but it is like, it, because as I mentioned to you the other day when we was chatting, I had a bit of a situation at the club, and I was, my club's not necessarily a troubled club, whereas the one that she went to is. It was like, I was thinking, fucking hell, if this is what's going on here, what the fuck's going on with my daughter is? And so, it's obviously like any parent, you worry about your kids, don't you? But you also have to live their life, and they have to experience, life. And unfortunately, sometimes that does come with,
risk.
With risk, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, if things can be done to lessen that, then 100%, listen up. But, yeah, I don't know. It's really weird. I mean, do you find, how old are your daughters, Si?
So, 18, 17, 16, 12, and then I've got two sons that are 14 and 8.
So with like the 18-year-old that's now of an age where she can go pubs and clubs and things like that, like, how do you play it? Do you, because obviously you also work in security as well, and obviously your job is to ensure that people are safe, and then your other job is to teach people how to be, yeah. you know, to be able to look after themselves and deal with conflict and risk.
Yeah, I think the thing with my kids is, I mean, I'm lucky in a way that none of them have shown that much of an interest in doing the whole clubbing thing or even drinking. They're not interested in it, or they don't want to, or whatever it is. So I'm kind of lucky that way, but it's sad in a way that as a parent, as their dad, since they were born, I've had to say to them, this is how the world is, and this is what you've got to do. And they've had their confrontations, you know, be it at school or outside of school. And, you know, my eldest, so my 18-year-old, she's actually my stepdaughter, but my eldest daughter has been doing karate since she was 1.5. She's literally in a nappy in the class. She's been teaching since she was 7. So in some respects, she's mad confident, but in the other side of things, she's really shy and reserved. But I just find it strange that we have to teach our daughters, oh, by the way, there's people who just want to assault you constantly. We're from an early age, we're almost telling them that these things are likely to happen. And so they're worried from early, don't go out on your own. But with my sons, it would be like, don't try not to go out. Not don't. There's a line between if they're boys, it's the way we treat them. Oh, go and be boys. You fall over, you skin your knee, don't worry. It's that whole thing that I hate of, oh, just man up. But when it's a daughter, it's like, oh, I'm a little princess and everything. But my daughter's a psychopath half the time.
I think also the thing is like with lads, it's like, yeah, we can, you know, hopefully we can let, you know, take these steps to protect themselves and that, but teaching boys not to be fucking, I don't know, we've got a lot of work to do there with boys and how they treat girls. I mean, like, even not even on the same thing of just physical harassment, is like just like dick pics and stuff like that. It's like I don't understand. Like, when I speak to all my girl mates about this phenomena, they like, Chris, I can talk to someone on Tinder, we can, you know, get to the point where we exchange phone numbers, and 30% are gonna send me an unwarranted picture of their dick within like the first like 2 days of having their number. And I just think that's just a bit mad that guys are like this. And what are we teaching boys about, you know, how to conduct yourself around women? I mean, it's just even the fundamentals of stuff like that before, like, even the, I don't know, how you get on to dealing with helping guys not become someone who's likely to sexually assault someone. It's just a lot of big chats to be had about how we bring up our, you know, our lads, really.
I do think it's important that, you know, as well as, you know, being aware that, you know, sending someone that, you know, unsolicited, or equally showing it to a hairdresser when you're having your hair cut.
Like, that was an accident.
Your Honour.
That was a total accident. That was awful. Did you hear about that, Si? I accidentally was trying to show my new hairdresser what haircut I wanted, and there was a picture of my penis on my phone, and I just was scrolling through. And
oh, thank God for that. For a minute, I thought you wanted to show your hairdresser a picture of what you wanted for your hair and just exposed your pubic area and went, I want it to look like this.
Do you know what? So that would have been less bad than what actually happened, I think. But scrolling past the picture of my throbbing member is just not cool. Yeah, that's the only time I've shown an unwarranted... And who knows? The sad thing is about that is that knowing that how used to this shit women are, she probably just thought I was doing that intentionally. Let's be honest. Yeah. She probably thought, here we go, here's another dickhead who thinks I want to see their penis, and I really don't. Mm. Like, it's such a strange behaviour, and I think that's just tip of the iceberg shit. Like, we can teach our daughters to be, you know, reduce the risk as much as possible. And we can teach the same thing to our sons as well. Like, they still apply. to a lesser extent, but also teach our sons, oh, fucking hell, don't do these things. These are fucking, shameful behaviour.
But that's what's on my list of things that guys can do. What happened to being a gentleman? What happened to teaching our sons how to be gentlemen? Hold a door. If the woman then says something about it and I can hold my own door, you don't have to say anything. You don't have to bite back.
No.
Just like you don't have to, if someone doesn't say thank you for holding the door, as annoying as it is, you don't have to shout, you're welcome, you fucking prick. We could just all be a little bit nicer. And I'm not saying that I do any of these things. Of course I shout after someone, you know, when I'm in a shop. You know, but I shouted at someone the other day because we were in a car park, I was with my kids. And someone was coming through the door. And my second, Kinsey, had gone through the door, but she sort of went through quick and got out of the way. Now, the rest of us, we were a little bit further back, so we stopped. And this person just started staring daggers at Kinsey. And I was being polite. I was like, oh, no, after you. And then they started staring at Kinsey and sort of like tutting and shaking their head. Oh, that was it. I went off the line. do what you like. Say what you like to me, but not my kids. Leave my kids out of it.
I think, Silas, you guys must have such strong feelings about protecting your children. I get like that over my mum. Like I feel aggressive at the thought of anyone exploiting my mum. Yeah. Like I really do. Or elderly people in general. So it must be the same for children. But as much as we can practice and try to be consciously aware of doing these things, like sometimes you can't. You know, we're never going to get it right all the time. It's just trying to practice it and be mindful of it as much as possible.
Small steps are better than no steps. As long as we're as a site, as long as everyone is making a little bit of progression, then that's fine. Like you say, no one's going to get it right all the time. I don't. I still kick off at people every now and again and just lose myself. I wake up in a bad mood for absolutely no reason. But you can't then live your entire life assuming that everyone is out to get you. I think that's part of the problem as well. People aren't being polite. They're not gentlemen. They're not. There's not a forethought of kindness about people.
Yeah. Well said.
I think it is weird because when you said, you know, your kids have been doing karate since they were, you know, in nappies and stuff, and it was like I made a conscious decision that both my kids were going to learn how to fight. At a young age, and it was like, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, is that because they were girls? And maybe it was, but I think if I'd had boys, I think I would have still done the same anyway. I think I would have just been like, I don't think it's a bad thing to have the tools to go, I'm in a situation that I don't want to be in, and my back's against the wall here. This is how I can get out of this as quickly and as easily as possible. Yeah. I think that's a life skill for everybody.
For everyone, I completely agree, Stu. I love doing it, but B, the like, I mean, I act like a total arsehole. I know I do on this podcast, but
and when you're driving,
and sometimes when I'm driving. Any other times you want to?
Yep, that time yep. I kicked you in the leg. Yeah. When you come out of a club and just low kicked me. Yeah.
It was good. It was good though. You were upset at how fast and powerful it was. I know. I could feel it. I could feel you let go. But most of the time, like I think, having learnt martial arts taught me so much confidence, like inner confidence in myself. Like I felt like I know how to defend myself, and having that as a kid. I remember seeing street fights as a kid, like when I started going out, like 15, 16, and I would see fights happen, and I would never want to participate in them. That was another thing it taught me. I was never interested in that. But I'd watch people fight, and I'd just be like, I've not got a problem here. For, you know, if they were to turn on me, firstly, run. But if I was forced into a corner, I do feel like, watching how they were throwing punches with, you know, not straight, you know, having their wrists straight, massive windmills. I was just like, and that has always been the way of learning self-defense. When I have got in those situations, I've been able to sort of like defend myself. And I like you say, Stu, I think it's a skill set for everyone, you know. Not only should it teach a bit of temper the anger, but also defend yourself.
Like you've retained them skills. If you're walking around dressed like that, mate, chances are someone's going to try and stick one on you.
Well, a kiss. I'm very sexy today.
Yeah, I was going to do that. I'll put your arm in and take you to the nearest home. Come on. He's obviously safe.
Let's get you a coffee.
Yeah.
Come on, get this guy some falafel.
Let's go. I want to show you. Look at this wonderful meal that my beautiful girlfriend cooked.
His podcast gold, isn't it? Yeah. Oh wow, wonderful. That does actually look really
that.
Good.
That's been sat down by me, and I'm like, I can't eat it. It's unprofessional. I'll be able to eat this while we have a podcast. As soon as it came, I was like, that's just going to go cold, isn't it?
I don't understand this. Anyway. This many years in, you're now worried about being unprofessional?
I think you ever got any reviews of this, and I would say that probably 80% of the reviews of this are negative ones about us eating.
Stop eating! Mind you, we haven't for ages, have we?
No.
Let's be fair. Let's be fair. We haven't for a long, long time.
Number two.
Avoid the confrontation in the first place. The safest way to not get in any sort of confrontation is don't be there. If we're teaching knife defense, the first thing I say is don't be at the sharp end. Don't be at the pointy end. It's really simple to not get stabbed if you're nowhere near it. So what I mean by that is, if you're walking down the street, like I said, in the middle of the pavement, you can see a group of lads who've been out, they've had a drink, they're being a bit rowdy, they're being a bit boisterous, cross the road. There's nothing wrong with you crossing the road. There's nothing wrong with you going into a local kebab shop for absolutely no reason, just to have a look and then just walk back out again. You can do other things if you can spot it, and that's that thing with your head up, walking down the middle of the road, the middle of the pavement, and you can spot everything coming. You know, you don't have to have your head on a complete swivel, you know, looking left and right behind you and doing sort of, you know, MI5 CIA tactics, but just be aware of it and see what's coming and just avoid it. There's no point walking through a group of drunk up early 20s lads who are then, they're going to say something. It's nowadays, it's in their nature. They can't keep their stupid mouth closed. So just take yourself off. Easy. Relatively.
Yeah.
I think if you can put space between yourself and a potential problem, it's the best place to start, isn't it?
Yeah. If you're not there, it's like, you know, if you're not in the car, you're not going to crash it. It's the same.
So when you say also avoid confrontation, is that also a bit like biting your lip if necessary, or is that part of it, or is that sort of like
that would be
a different one?
That's always difficult because you can't tell someone to, you know, you just got to keep your mouth closed, head up and just walk through it with a bit of confidence, because then you know what guys are like. Guys are going to turn around and either call her a lesbian or call her frigid or some stupid juvenile comment that they're going to make. So there's no way of necessarily avoiding that. My avoidance would be completely go the other side of the road. You know, if it's safe, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and there's no cars, just jump into the road. Just walk into the road, let them have the pavement, because they're not going to be gentlemen and get out of your way. Just take a slightly more circuitous route around that group, but again, while still staying on a lit area. You know, if you have to go through them, you have to go through them. It would be, on an individual basis, whether it would be a case of you said something or how confident you were feeling, that you walk through a group of lads, they say something, and you want to tell them to wind their neck in.
Yeah,
it's so weird. Like, just I would say that like 90% of everything I've, you know, over the years of working in what I, you know, in the clubs and stuff like that, I reckon 95% of any trouble that I've seen is fucking pointless.
Yeah.
They would have woke up the next day and just thought. More than likely in the police, so I just thought, why did I fucking do that? Why did I hit him? What did he do that was so bad? Like, just it's bollocks. Like, so much of it. And if I ever get a chance in any sort of things where there's like, you can see it starting to escalate, I'll always just go, like, come and have a chat, man. Like, so what are you at tonight? You've not got missus. Oh, you have. All right, you've got kids. And like,
that's when you stab them up, Stu.
And like, and that's when they turn around, that's when I hit them on the back of the head and run. Like, but no, it is. It's like, just try and bring them back to reality a little bit as well, and just kind of just go that, hey, look, if you go and whack him now, chances are, you know, you're going to get nicked. Do you really want to get... Once cocaine's in the mix, then it's a different different beast. But generally, like, if you can just kind of get someone just to snap out of that little mindset of just like, oh, fuck it, I ain't having that. Because it is bollocks. It's absolute bollocks. It's just chest out nonsense that really is based on the most menial of things that, you know... When you're in a police cell, you're doing, I think, oh, fucking hell, really? Like, it really was nothing. He spilt my drink, or, like, you know, he looked at my bird. It's like, it's bollocks. It really is. But yeah, don't know why I've gone off on that tangent. But
no, I think it makes a lot of sense. But that's the it's same like about being, people don't give.
Go on.
Sorry, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, that's the same about being gentlemanly. If someone does spill your drink, rather than wait for the confrontation, just offer to replace it. It's not that difficult. You know, it's going to cost you, what, a couple of quid. Just offer to repay or apologise, mate, I'm so sorry, you know, do you want me to buy you another drink?
I've seen that so often.
Yeah, but if you did that, someone would say, no, don't worry, it's all right, it's an accident. No, honestly, you're all right. All of a sudden, they're friends.
I've seen that so often. Yeah, when people, like, I've seen people just walk up behind people and accidentally spill it all up them, and the person's turned around, and then the person who's done it has just stared at them.
Yeah.
And it's like, what part of you is stopping you saying, I'm sorry, let's sort this out? And if you're fucking broke, if you genuinely looked devastated because you was, that you'd done that to someone, that'd be the end of it. Like you say, like, I've had loads of drinks spilt on me, thrown all over me. No, but like spilt on me. And it's just like, it's all right, man. Don't worry about it. I mean, sometimes there is like a point where you're like, oh my God, like that's literally your whole drink all over me. But there's nothing that can be happening. It's an accident, right? Or the person might have been being a bit careless or whatever, but...
You can only do your best, can't you, to try and resolve it, you know, by apologising and just, you know, being as nice as you can be.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Like, the people don't have the courage to apologise sometimes.
Definitely not. Or even sometimes the mentality to realise that you're in a club or you're in a shisha bar or you're somewhere that's busy. You haven't gone to a high-end wine tasting, you moron. You're in a club with thousands of other people. You're going to get bumped into. It's just going to happen. If you go there with the mindset of accepting it, fine. If you go there with a mindset of anyone bumps into me, I'm giving them a clap, well, go spend the night in the cell then. I don't know. I don't understand why you're going out with that mentality in the first place. There's something, and again, this goes back to the list that I've got for what guys can do, is just have some respect for yourself. If you've got no respect for yourself, how can you have respect for anyone else? How can you look at someone else and empathize with them and go, I wonder if they've had a bad day at work, or they might have just got fired, or they broke up with their partner, or, you know, the kids are playing up, or whatever it is. The same shit that everyone else is going through, you're not the only one to then go out and then go, you wake up and you're in a bad mood, or you don't like the way your hair looks today, or whatever it is. You can't go and take that out on other people. That's what's a lot of the problem with some men, I think.
Yeah.
They're not happy with their own lives, and so they take it out on other people.
100%.
So just take that on board, Stu.
Yeah. Right. Bad hair day. Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, this is the first time you ain't brushed your hair with a fucking toffee apple for about 3 years, because you've got that
still got a hat on it.
Oh dear. Right, so what's number one, man?
Number one, heads up, notice everything. So this encompasses pretty much everything you need to do in order to walk home.
Yeah,
you have got to have your head up and look confident. So if you look confident, then people are going to view you differently to if you try and skulk away, hide, try and look meek, try and look a little bit timid. It's not going to work. You're looking like a victim. You're advertising the fact that you're a victim. You're advertising the fact that you're vulnerable to attack.
Don't be like an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And don't be on the phone or, you know, or any of the other things that you might have. You know, get your iPad out to find out. You're advertising the fact that you've got these things that people want to steal. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, the opportunity is going to be looking for things like that. Someone who's looking to attack you is looking for the weakest member of society. If you look like you're going to kick off and scream and shout and put up a fuss and all the rest of it, these people are cowards at the end of the day. The men who attack men and women are cowards. You know what anyone says. And so they're looking for the weakest members of society. Don't make yourself look like that. So a lot of people, again, have said to me that when they walk home, what they would do is they pretend to be on the phone. I don't agree with that. If you're pretending to be on the phone, again, you've covered one of your ears with the phone, whether you're on the phone or not. Number two, you're showing people what you have. Oh, there's the phone. Mm. Just walk past and just rob it out of their hand. Mm. Easy. And you're taking away your ability to be aware of the situation. And again, like I said with number five, it's just, you can't, things like someone suggested, I think it was today, a friend of mine suggested, oh, what if I was on a video call? If I video call one of my friends if I'm walking home. Like, yeah, but that's not recorded. Well, how's that going to help? And again, you're distracted by the fact that there's a video call. You're talking to another person. You're not paying attention to, I mean, it goes back to the basics of what do you teach kids? What did they teach, you know, us when we were at school about out across the road? Stop, look, listen. You've got to do all three things. And the same is with everyone's safety, is you have to look and listen. You have to actively listen to what is going on around you and actively take in what your eyes are telling you. You know, oh, the kebab shop looks like it's about to have a punch up on crossing the road. You know, have your head up and look confident constantly. This whole shrinking around and, you know, hiding your phone in your jacket, your headphones on and pretending that the rest of the world doesn't exist, doesn't work. Just doesn't work.
I think what you said, Si, about, you know, it's a bit like the Billy Goat's gruff, isn't it? Like someone who's, these people are cowards, but they're looking for the easiest route to whatever they want. And it doesn't matter about your size. If you're projecting confidence, they're gonna be like, I'll wait for the next one. Mm. Sadly, and that's really sad. But the less opportunity that we give people to feel like you can be preyed upon, and yeah, so I guess like presenting that confidence, they're gonna think, oh fuck it, not that person. They're gonna give me hell.
Yeah, and you might not feel that confident, but again, it's that fake it till you make it. You might not feel that confident, but they don't know that. And then as time goes on, you will feel more confident. You know, and it's the same as I've always taught my daughters. You know, I've taught my daughters and my sons, but, you know, mainly the girls, of this is what you do. You know, you keep yourself to yourself. That's fine. You know, you're not going out there looking for trouble, but you're aware of everything that's going on, you know, and they are. Especially my eldest, but yeah, they definitely are. And so going back to what we were saying about the clubbing thing, is I'd be relatively okay with them going out to clubs, knowing that A, they're sensible kids, but also B, they're very, very aware. Now, I would in a different situation, I don't think I'd handle it very well. It would be a case of no. You know, I'm not going to Joseph Fritz with you and keep you in the basement, but you know, you can go out to a club, but, you know, Dad's going to be stood there like a bouncer, like a, you know, close protection officer or whatever, just stood there ruining your night, basically.
Hmm. Yeah, it is a weird one. And also just to sort of touch on that, you know, head up, you know, look, listen, like doing what you do, And working in what you work in, do you find that sometimes it's all encompassing? Because I can be out and the people I'm with will be like, hello, I'm talking to you, and I'm looking over their shoulder, I'm not going to sit there because I don't have my back to the door, I don't have my back to anyone, so I want to sit over there, and like, and just stupid things that just through, I guess a big part of my job is just to try and I make clear, I'm not a doorman or anything like that. I'm just a licensee. But, you know, I try and limit any kind of situations arising before they arise, you know, so the doorman don't have to do anything. And so I find that I'm constantly just watching situations. Like, why are you watching? I'm just watching how many times that fella's been at the toilet. And it's like, have a fucking night off.
And you're like, making yourself sound like a fucking Robert De Niro in Casino right now.
Well, okay, that's rich.
I'm watching all the security cameras in the back.
do you know what I'd be worried about if they come into my fucking casino? Mr. Tumnus that looks like he's been tangoed. That's what I'd be worried about, mate.
Absolutely. Mr. Tumnus. But, yeah, I agree with you. It is tiring to have this constantly going on in your head. I'll be honest, I said this to loads of my friends. It does make me the most socially awkward person ever. Because as far as I'm concerned, my job is to look after everyone. Now, if I'm out in a just having a coffee, not my coffee shop or not, you know, not one that a friend of mine owns, normal, whatever, I have to walk in there, look at who's working, look at who's sat there, the types of people they are, how many groups they are, where the exit is, where the toilet is, what table I'm going to sit at, and then I've got to sit in the corner because I have to face out and face a certain way. And if I don't like it, I turn around and walk out. If there's a queue that I'm going to be in there for, I reckon, probably more than 4 or 5 minutes, I'll leave and go somewhere else. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm vulnerable stood in the queue because I'm surrounded by everything. But it makes me to the point where if I'm having a conversation with a friend, I was having a conversation with a friend at the sushi bar at Sequoia, and I'm out the front and they're inside over the glass barrier thing. And I'm having a conversation. But I don't look at people necessarily when I have conversations. My eyes flick everywhere. So I'm looking at that table over there, or I'm looking at someone who's just walking past. And I think it was one of the local crackheads that was walking past. So I'm facing square onto the person I'm talking to. And I just turn my body that way because I saw them coming. And nothing happened. They walked past and I turned back. And I said to them, we were having this conversation about this exact subject, about safety and everything else. I said, but did you see what I did there? I had to turn and he was coming. And they said, we didn't even see anyone coming. So they hadn't even noticed the person walking past. And yet my brain's kicking over going, oh, I've got to notice this one. I've got to notice that one. Just, you think you've done nothing all day and then all of a sudden you're tired. Why? Your brain's going constantly.
And I reckon most of the time people are watching people like you, Chris.
The thing is, Si, once you get to seventh, Dan, you won't. It's so natural, this stuff. It won't tire you out.
He's confident there, isn't he?
Once you're seventh, Dan, mate, I just.
You
I
keep
know
writing
everyone,
them checks, Chris.
Listen,
keep writing them checks.
I'm not taking self defense lessons from Bill and Ben's weird cousin.
Listen, I know where everyone is in the world. Now, so that's it'll come to you, mate. Don't worry. Just keep training hard, man.
Yeah, and,
right. It'll come to you.
Nothing's going to give me more joy than having my phone in my hand and having you in your fucking ill-fitting gi telling Simon how to do what he does. I can't wait. I can't fucking wait. Our Patreon subscriptions are going to go through the roof when that video gets posted.
Well, talking about Patreon. We're going to record another podcast, Si, with you, aren't we, this week? And we're going to do a common thing that we both love, which is disappearing down a YouTube hole, looking at how stupid Steven Seagal is.
Yeah.
And we're going to do top five stories about Steven Seagal, because that guy is an absolute fool.
Guys,
so if you're a patron...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a patron, you'll get to check that out. Yeah, come over, patreon.com/hardcore listing. And... I've learned a few bits and pieces there, mate, about my own conduct and other things that you said in terms of being alert when out for women as well. So thanks, man. It's been a lot of fun.
No, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh, mate, absolute pleasure. Any of the other listeners have got any advice for Chris's conduct, contact us via the socials. Sorry, in regards to Samra Academy, if people want to find out more about it, where's the best place to go and do that?
Probably message on Instagram, Samra_Academy. Or I've got the website, which is samra-academy.co.uk. But if you wanted to actually message me, then just send us a message on Instagram. I'm on Twitter, but I'll be honest. I don't go on it, and B, I don't even know what my thing is on it. not.
Yeah, we can say the same for Facebook. yeah, and so what we'll do, obviously, when this episode's out, you know, if you found it via Instagram and or you're struggling to find Summer Academy, go on the Hardcore Listing Instagram. We'll tag Si in all the posts to do with this episode. So it's been an absolute pleasure, mate, and look forward to chatting all things Seagull with you soon, man.
Yeah, yeah, man. Brilliant. Thanks, gents.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, brother.
Bye.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.